Hi again, everybody, and welcome to the Emrons Podcast, episode 120. It is Friday, October 17th, 2008. Now, I'd intended on doing a podcast yesterday, Thursday, but quite frankly, the day got away from me. A sister-in-law came into town, and went and had lunch with her, and then the day went on, and I ended up recording quite late with Jason for today's podcast. So, there was no Thursday episode, obviously. But next week, I'm going to be doing one on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, or at least that's the plan. We'll see. Now, I do have a comment and a voicemail to play, but I'm going to actually hold those for Monday's episode. So at the conclusion of the episode, that'll be it for today. But of course, leave a message, send an email, leave a comment, whatever you want. Right now, here's the episode with Jason. Well, the campaign is in the home stretch now, and finally, Jason and I have managed to find time to sit down and talk again about the campaign. So welcome again to my co-host, Jason.
Hello. To quote an old sportscaster named Phil Georgeff, who used to do the races at Arlington Park, were sort of, here they come, spinning out of the turn, and we're in the final turn, guys. Thank the Lord.
I know. Quite frankly, I can't wait for this to be over.
although I might be ill if the results don't go the way I would like it to be, but It's time for them to go, one way or the other.
Yes. This is Friday's episode, but we are actually recording this on Thursday, New Zealand time, which is debate night. And the final, he says with an exclamation point and underscore.
Yay! Yeah, the final debate. Yay!
And we actually, before I turn on the recorder, stupidly, we already started talking about the debate, as you do. And I was telling Jason before that the thing about that, I didn't watch the entire debate. A lot of it I just listened to while I was doing things around the house. And I'm kind of glad that I didn't watch it, because if I had seen that stupid smirk on McCain's face all that time, I would have wanted to slap it off of him. His snarkiness was annoying enough, but that smirk.
And yeah, I think that's problematic with him the whole time. He's able to make sort of these comments. There's a way to do it.
Yeah.
There's a way to draw the distinctions. And it's just like, okay. And also, I watched probably the first 45 minutes, and then I knew I would be doing this and sort of have to get ready for school tomorrow, so to speak, and had to do stuff around the house, and then came and watched probably the last 15 or so minutes. So I probably watched about an hour of it all together. And this is the thing that I've noticed time and time again. There legitimate, I don't know necessarily legitimate points, but they're points that he can make, sort of from here, I'm running this campaign, I'm the Republican, there are points that he can make, but he does it in such a condescending, snarky, when they did, and that one, remember, that's from the last debate, and a lot of people, that's racial, no, I thought somebody, I think it was on CNN, it's just like, no, it's like the grandfather talking about the grandchild. Oh, it's that one. And their point was, if in talking that way to Obama, you're doing horribly among young people. That's not going to make them want to vote for you.
Yeah.
And I think another very important point that was made watching ABC commentators tonight, which I agreed with. One was that, he got really passionate talking about stem cell research and school vouchers, and, he was very good on that, but that plays to the base.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't win
over independence. I guess it was stem cell research, or it was abortion. I'm sorry, I guess it was abortion.
Yeah, abortion.
Because they brought stem cell research up in an earlier part. And what another commentator made, which I think is very, very true, is what McCain needed to do was to convince someone who's voting for Obama to vote for him. And he think he didn't do that. I thought sort of the opening part on the economy and Joe the plumber and all that, Obama didn't do quite as well probably as he should have, but I thought he did okay. And again, I think that what was rather discordant about the whole thing is the market dropped 700 points.
And the markets in Australia, New Zealand, and other places in this part of the world have also dropped today, and so it's likely that that's going to continue as the time zones move.
Yeah,
so this isn't over yet.
So, I mean, the 900 plus that was made on Monday, as my dad sort of then I talked to my dad about this, is we're about up 150 for the week so far, and there are two more training sessions.
Yeah.
And so both of them, you know, was kind of like, and maybe it was the format because they were sitting down, and it was kind of like, oh, let's, it's a coffee clutch or something. But the sort of McCain sort of got to it, you know, but it was, I don't know. I think it was a draw. I think maybe on points, McCain might have won.
No, I disagree. I think that it started out with McCain strongly on the attack. And for the first 20, maybe 30 minutes, Obama was spent most of his time explaining himself and his positions. But it all started to turn to customers.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Well, no. I mean, that actually helps reinforce his own base as well as talk to some of the independents. But I think that it all started to turn to custard for McCain when he went on and on and on and on about Bill Ayers. It's a stupid narrative that the Republicans are running. He knows it. The Republicans know it. And I don't know why they think that this is suddenly going to gain traction when it's been discredited by every major media outlet, including Fox News upon occasion.
Yes.
So that's where he lost it. And the last half hour was clearly Obama's. McCain did himself no favors in some of his answers when he was talking about how there'd be no litmus tests for judges. He'd only pick qualified ones. No litmus tests, except they have to be against Roe v. Wade. I mean, that's called a litmus test?
Yeah. I missed that part.
I think you think we're stupid or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I just wish it was tomorrow. I wish it had been yesterday, because a lot can happen. But it's hard to the CNN national debate poll. Results momentarily. See, I don't see how McCain did okay in the beginning, but or even sort of better, but there wasn't any zinger, there wasn't any, you know.
His best line of the night was when he said, I'm not George Bush. If you wanted to run against George Bush, you should have run 4 years ago, except that he should have said that in the first debate. It's too little too late now. And plus, which he is advocating basically the same policies as George Bush. It's a little bit disingenuous to say, well, I opposed Bush on this bill and that bill because he supported him 90% of the time. So it's a little bit dishonest. But putting all those issues aside, we are, of course, now in the final stages of the campaign. We've had three now presidential debates and one vice presidential debate. And I actually didn't
Now, Arthur, just one debate, you know, I think there should have been more debates, you know, and
I couldn't
and,
watch
you know, Maverick, and we're being Mavericky, and to quote Tina Fey in her skit, if anybody's in a drinking game in Alaska, Maverick.
Yeah, we actually recorded, what we've been doing is we've been recording the debates because they happen during the afternoon our time. And then when Nigel gets home, we watch them together. And we recorded the vice presidential one, but we ended up not watching. And I decided, what's the point? I can't stand the woman. There's no way in hell I would vote for her for anything. So why watch it? It's not going to do anything. So I didn't. And I quite frankly don't care what she said, because she doesn't say anything that interests me whatsoever. And the thing is that I'm keenly aware that a lot of my fellow liberals, and those who are even further to the left, have had great sport making fun of her. Obviously, the Tina Fey routines are quite popular, and she's this big joke. But I keep saying, look, she wouldn't be such a hilarious joke with her finger on the nuclear button.
No.
She's dead. This is deadly serious.
Well, yeah, and the main point, even sort of above and beyond that, well, of course, that's pretty bad, isn't it? You know, the actuary tables.
Yeah.
Show that there's a 30% that McCain would die in office, you know, not relating the potential stress of the job, which, you know, might be kind of a little bit, and the fact that he's had several bouts of skin cancer.
Yeah.
The thing which, not being melodramatic, but I guess I will be a little bit, going a little bit over, is my concern about is if perchance a miracle happens and he's elected, I'll couch it in those terms, and he dies in office. This is someone who is the fundamentalist wing of the Republican Party. That's all who's left in the Republican Party, isn't it?
Yeah,
anyway, dream candidate. And I can see her creating a theocracy in this country.
That would be her mission.
you know, there was this thing where she went, you know, I guess before her church, and she talked about, well, you know, I need to do all these things, and you need to pray for the pipeline and pray that I can put the cop cars. Well, this nothing's going to happen the right way unless Alaskans get right with God. Well, pardon the pun here, what the hell does that mean?
Well, yeah, you know? It means that you have to subscribe to her Assemblies of God beliefs. I mean, she is to the extreme of Christianity. And here's the thing. Years ago, when I was a Christian, I was told by a liberal Christian that I could never question the faith of someone else because I didn't know what was in their heart. And I bought that as a good liberal. I did as I was told and didn't criticize the fundamentalists. Well, those days are over because those people are my mortal enemies. They want to see people like me in prison camps or worse. And I'm not going to sit by silently and allow people like that to get away with spewing their nonsense without it being challenged.
Well,
here's the thing about Sarah Palin. She believes in end times. She believes that there will be a final war in Armageddon that will start in the Middle East. I do not want that woman with her finger on the nuclear button when she believes that it has to start in the Middle East to bring about this reign of Jesus and all that. Now, I don't believe in the end times. Never have, never will. So why should I have to put up with somebody like that endangering the entire world? This is just insanity. She should never have gotten to this point.
Well, no, but see, here's the point. Here's sort of an additional point about how the person, you know, your liberal Christian friend, I can still consider myself to be a Christian, is still right.
And I have nothing against Christians, I should add.
Well, I know. But he's see, here's the dividing line here. You can't... I don't think you should question their beliefs, but what's happening here, they're not just practicing their beliefs. They're deciding everybody else should practice their beliefs as well. Hmm. I wrote a long time ago, which I sent to you, a paper about the 1980 election and the Christian right.
Yep.
And this is what is, you know, when I say these things, this is from the research I did almost 30 years ago now. Is that right? Oh, my God, it is. Oh, we are old. Anyway. they're born again, and they know the truth because they know the mind of God. And it's kind of like, that's really taking the Lord's name in vain, but we won't go there. So the notion is that if people can oppose them because they don't know the truth. Yeah. And then the question then must be asked, well, what do you do if they don't accept the truth? Yeah. And the next logical step is that you get rid of these people. You do something so that they're not there. That's the, again, sorry for the pun, fundamental problem with this. It would be one thing to say, you know, hey, I'm out here. I'm going to, you know, proselytize my religion. Hey, I think this is the way you should believe. That might be a little bit intrusive. But that's one thing. Like, hey, you know, hey, Arthur, you know, here's my pamphlet. Hey, you know, I think, you know, talking to you. It's another to more or less say this is the way you should believe.
Yeah.
My religion is the real religion.
The bottom line for me with people like that is, quite frankly, I think their beliefs are crazy. I'm not going to pretend I don't think that because I do. However, if they want to believe that way, that's their right. But they have no right to impose their beliefs on me. And the thing is that the not so crazy people, the more main, it's hard to believe I could ever find myself saying this, but the more mainstream fundamentalists, say of 20 years ago or thereabouts, they used to go on and on about how that they were being the ones who were being persecuted because their rights were being trampled on. Well, that's, of course, absolute nonsense. You can't be in the majority and have your rights trampled. It's just not possible. You control everything. And what always annoyed me about that was they were saying that unless, for instance, gay rights were suppressed, unless abortion was outlawed, unless prayer was mandatory in the public schools, their rights were being trampled on. And that's just bullshit.
Right.
And this, getting back to Sarah Palin, she doesn't believe in abortion for any reason or any circumstance. And John McCain was touching on that as well. He was belittling the idea that any abortion should ever be permitted for when a woman's life is in danger. Or her health. Anyway, I don't want to get into that topic. But about this religion thing, as I said, basically, I don't have any problem. Well, I do have a problem, but I can accept her having her religious beliefs, even though I think they're crazy. but I cannot accept that she has any right to impose them on anyone else. And that's what she wants to do. She and her people.
Yes, I totally agree.
But anyway, I don't want to, personally, I don't want to spend any more time on her.
No.
Because she just creeps me out like nothing. Now, one of the things I did want to talk about, though, was about this whole thing about polling. All of the national polls, that I'm aware of anyway, now show Barack Obama ahead. And the margin is either big or huge, depending on which poll you're looking at. And I've long said that two things. First of all, that anybody who supports Barack Obama should be acting as if Obama were 20 points behind in the polls, because we need that energy. We can't take anything for granted. And the other thing I've said is that it's going to tighten up before the actual ballots are cast for a variety of reasons.
Yeah,
it always does, exactly. But one of the things I wanted to dismiss
except if we continue to have weeks in the stock market like we are continuing to have.
That's true. If that continues, then it will only help Obama and the Democrats generally. But one of the things that I wanted to, I think, dismiss, and I hope by now it's pretty much been discredited, is this notion that the wingnuts have been promoting endlessly about the so-called Bradley effect. And essentially what that is that people are lying to pollsters because they feel they can't admit their own racism and say, I will not vote for a black man. So they say, oh, I'll vote for Obama. And then when they get to the polling booth, they actually vote for the white fellow. And this comes from when Tom Bradley ran for governor of California, and he was many points ahead. And then when the election was held, he lost by 1%. And ABC News did a really good analysis of this. I think it was yesterday, before, I can't remember. Anyway, and they pointed out that polls have tightened up in elections, which tends to give support, except that if you look at other polls, in the primaries, for instance, they were pretty damn accurate on how people were going to end up voting. And their general conclusion was that it's a bit of a myth that people will lie to that great extent to pollsters. And I actually think that things are more likely to be the Trump race this time.
I think things have sort of advanced somewhat, but I really don't see that that's going to be a factor this time around. I really don't because I just don't see that. I just don't see that now. You know, there are, let's say, for instance, in some way that's true. There are also many people who don't have landlines and only have cell phones.
Yep.
And as somebody pointed out, it's, they're going to probably vote for the majority of them for Obama. I don't think people are going to sit on their hands. I think the turnout's going to be huge no matter what. I don't see this as being a relevant issue. It's, you know, 20 years on, things can close. And, you know, I'm assuming they were doing likely voters. Well, you know, maybe your kid gets sick. Maybe you're in a car accident. Maybe your day is too busy, or maybe you forget. I mean, so,
yeah,
you know, and I would think more likely than not that if someone isn't going to lie, someone's just going to hang up.
Yeah, and that's what one of the polling experts was saying, basically, that it's easier just to not refuse to participate than to engage in that. And also, he also pointed out that most of the errors in polling in that respect are based on the polling company making the wrong assumptions about who is a likely voter.
Right.
More than anybody lying to pollsters. Because it does require a widespread tendency to lie. And you might get that in pockets, but I doubt very much you'll get that in all 50 states.
Also, you're talking about a 6% swing in California, which is huge. I mean, you know, if it was, you know, some small town in Alaska, that might happen. but it just, I think, is just way too big.
Yeah, yeah.
Who seemed to be a stronger leader, Obama and McCain? This is the CNN flash poll of debate watchers. Who seemed to be the stronger leader? Who was more likable, Obama? 70%, McCain, 22%. One of the things that I also found quite interesting, and I actually posted about this at Jason's View from D.C., blogspot.com, was that they had these national polls, and, you know, maybe I'm sort of my math skills are a little rusty, but, you know, it was like McCain 39, Obama 53 or something.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that doesn't add up to 100, does it? What was the rest of the number there?
Yeah, one presumes that there are.
What was that 8?
Don't know.
You know that 8%. I'm assuming that was undecided. And even if they completely go for Obama, and again, the national polls are meaningless. It's the 50 states and the districts.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, the Real Clear Politics electoral map, which is something that we talked about, we used in the primary, shows solid for Obama, 249 electoral votes, 37 leaning. That gives him 286. Solid for McCain Palin, 140, leaning 18, and toss-up is 94. So, I mean, if it were held right now, Obama wins.
Yeah.
And the single most important thing now to watch is where they go.
Where who goes?
Where the candidates go.
Oh, yeah.
You had recently both Palin and McCain in Southern Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, they went to North Carolina. They went to Indiana.
Yeah.
They went to Indiana.
One of the most Republican states there is in the Midwest.
I don't think Indiana, and that in this Real Clear Politics Electoral College map, Indiana is a toss-up state. Here are the toss-up states. There are 94 electoral votes. Florida, North Carolina, West Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, Missouri, and Nevada.
Hmm.
So, you know, even if McCain runs, like somebody said, even if McCain runs the table, which is unlikely, you know, that's one, two, let me see if I can do math here. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seven states. You know, it's so incredibly unlikely that Obama would lose all seven.
Yeah.
You know, he would think he would win one or two. And if for some reason the 37 that are leaning towards Obama, which is Virginia, which I think is still a little bit up in the air, Minnesota, Colorado, and New Mexico, say he loses all of those, you know, there might be a state that's leaning towards McCain, Georgia, and North Dakota that might go towards Obama. I mean, it's 3 weeks away, which is a lifetime in politics. And there are always possibilities, but the fundamentals just seem to be pointing towards McCain needed to really connect and knock Obama out, and sort of the chattering classes have more or less said he did well, but he didn't, again, what the guy said on ABC, you know, he needed to persuade an Obama voter to switch, and I don't think that he did that. I think the William Ayers stuff and the Acorn stuff, which is just utter, this usual bullshit from the Republicans about, voter fraud so we can purge people from the rolls.
That's what it's all about. It's worth noting that, and this has been pointed out by several different people in different places, that one of the reasons why they know about the improper registrations that were filed by Acorn workers is because Acorn points it out.
Yes.
In nearly every state, probably all states as far as I know, when there's an independent group that conducts voter registration, they're required to turn in all forms, regardless of anything. They must turn in all forms. And so what Acorn does is it peruses the lists and it looks for any that it thinks are suspicious and flags them for the election authorities to investigate further. So it's really incredibly dishonest of the Republicans to be suggesting, dishonest as being a kind word too, to suggest that Acorn is deliberately going out there trying to come up with these false voters. Because
more importantly, it's not voter fraud because no one's voted.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Registration.
Exactly.
And in all likelihood, it's like ballot initiative for slot machines in the District of Columbia, something we really need here. And the first time they tried to get it on the ballot was who spent more time attacking his opponent? McCain 80%, Obama 7. Anyway, there were all these irregularities. And that ultimately is sort of the responsibility of the organization who's backing the drive, but if you're paying people, you know, get X number of signatures, it's what Obama said, you know, and as I said, you know, they're just filling this in. This is not the organization perpetrating a fraud. This is the people out there, you know, like the big thing is, I guess, Tony Romo is the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. Is going to be is registering in Nevada. Probably not, and probably won't be showing up to vote in Nevada either. Or somebody jokingly said the offensive line of the Cowboys won't be voting in Nevada either.
And it's important to stress that filing false registrations is not the same thing as vote fraud.
Right.
Voter fraud is when you file an illegal vote. It's not the same thing as filing false registrations. And to repeat yet again, Acorn themselves point out these questionable and probably false registrations. That's where they come from.
And even more important, this plays to the Republican base because this is something that they believe. I haven't gotten my 401k statement from my work 401k yet. But, you know, a couple of things, they dropped 20%, 25%. Mm. You know, I'm sorry, I'm an independent voter or maybe someone who's undecided. How there can be anybody, I don't know, but we won't go there, at least not yet. And it's like, I don't care. I don't care about this person who, you know, might have been an associate of Obama. And I thought he handled that question beautifully. Here are my associates, and he rattled off all these people's names. But I'm not going to care about that. And this sort of first surface in the town, it was before the town hall meeting. No questions about him. No, nobody in what people talked about sort of over and over and over again. The voters that McCain needs to get, this is not on their agenda. The stock market's dropped like 2,000 points. You know, the stock market from its high has dropped 5,000 points. At the rate it's going, it's going to be halved. I'll be able to buy a warm bucket of spit with my 401k funds at this rate. You know,
people are worried about real economic issues. They're worried about the value of their home and whether or not they're going to be able to make their mortgage payments. They're worried about their health care. They're worried about the education of their kids. They're not worried about some stupid 60s ex-radical who Barack Obama didn't even meet until relatively recently. I mean, and we don't really want to go down that road about guilt by association, because if you do then you've got to talk about McCain's palling around with right-wing death squads in Central America and helping the Reagan administration to cover up Iran-Contra.
And all these other things.
I mean, come on.
And it would be one thing if, you know, you could say, well, here's Bill Ayers, and then here's a parade of other people.
Yeah.
Then you kind of go, all right, but you can't do that.
Yeah. And the thing is, the record shows that since at least the 70s onwards, that by all records that are known, Bill Ayers has been a perfectly responsible and respectable citizen. So whatever he did or didn't do in the 60s, and there is some dispute about that, that was in the 60s when Barack Obama was 8 years old. Clearly, he has no responsibility for any of that. And it's just silly to keep going on and on and on about that, as Palin and McCain have. I mean, we don't keep going at Palin about her association with anti-American secessionists in Alaska. We could, but we don't, because that's not relevant. That's not what the American people care about.
Right.
Well, it does. It is good, at least, to get this debate bizzo out of the way so we can concentrate on the last, well, not even 3 weeks anymore of the campaign.
Right.
And
who did the best job in the debate? Democrats, 88% for Obama, 5% for McCain. Independents, 57% for Obama, 31% for McCain. This is the CNN Instant Debate Watchers poll. Republicans, 18% for Obama and 68% maybe for McCain. So I would say, I'm very nervous. I have to say I'm very nervous, but I sort of go in cycles. But it looks good. We have to cross our fingers. But I don't know. It's interesting to me during the sort of totally bizarre behavior of, oh, I'm going to go to Washington and solve this problem. Who could better handle the economy? Obama, 59%, McCain, 35%. Who would better handle financial crisis? Obama, well, they're doing this too fast. Healthcare, Obama 62 to 31.
Oh, that was clear looking at CNN's.
Handle taxes, 56 to 41. The thing which sort of broadening this discussion a bit beyond politics that I thought was quite interesting when, you know, the roof caved in the market was the real sort of indicator. I mean, the Dow, obviously, the Dow's tanking, but a much more important indicator is called this LIBOR rate, which is set in London, and it's sort of what the Bank of England or some sort of bank in England sets for the lending rate. Say we're banks, you know, you're a bank and I'm a bank, you know, I'm the National Bank of Washington, D.C., and you're the National Bank of Auckland. And that's the rate that we would lend money to each other. And that is still very, very high. And until that comes down so that, you know, I don't see how any of this stuff, I mean, it's going to help, but I mean, you know, literally the bottom fell out like a month ago.
Yeah. And the thing is that when it comes down to it, the people who McCain would bring in to try to work on this are they're basically the same people who created the mess in the first place. And I certainly don't trust them to be able to fix the situation. I'd much rather rely on the folks that Barack Obama will bring in to fix this situation. Because, you know, he's not part of the problem. McCain is.
Right.
I don't think McCain gets it. I really don't think he gets it.
Well, I think that's probably true. It's sort of scary.
Yeah.
That they are not really getting what is going on. You know, that's and there is now the big thing is that about one of the automobile companies going, and if you know one of those went or you know saying we're declaring bankruptcy, game, set, and match over. So it's very, very scary. And it sort of the way it's worked itself through the economy, it's taking about a month. And now there are all these stories about anecdotal stuff about people not being able to get loans and what that means. And, you know, not being able to get a loan to hire some people, not being able to get a loan for these, you know, the short term meeting of payrolls, which the government is stepping in and going to do something about. But you have to wonder about how long this is going to take and sort of the damage that's going to be done in the meantime. You know, I guess they admonished all the banks. It's nice to know we own part of Citibank now and some of these other places as well.
One of the things about this that I don't understand, and maybe somebody can explain it to me, I would have thought that if a company needs to borrow money to meet payroll, that it's got bigger problems than not being able to find credit.
Well, no, because it's a short-term loan. You know, say you get all your cash in at the beginning of the month, and that makes your first payroll, and you pay all your bills, but you need sort of a short-term loan because you don't have all the money to meet the payroll on the 15th. So you get a very short-term loan, and it's a turnaround. It can be like a week or 10 days because you're going to get the money. Let's say for some reason your money always comes in the first week of the month and the third week of the month.
So basically,
or towards the end.
I don't mean to cut you off, but basically it's the equivalent of a payday loan for a worker. You go and you borrow money in anticipation of your paycheck so that you can, I don't know, keep the lights on or whatever it might be, or buy food or whatever.
Right. It's a very short-term loan. Or you're going to buy a piece of equipment, you know, so you can expand. And you don't have the money for it, so you go out and you get a short-term
loan. Well, I can understand that
short-term
equipment,
loan.
Actually. I guess what troubles me is for something like payroll, which is sort of fundamental to a company's operations. I guess I just haven't paid that much attention to the way business finance is conducted. Maybe it's different here. I don't know, because I've just never heard of it before. But then I suppose I never had any reason to hear about it either until this all came up. But it just struck me as odd is all. And I was concerned that there might be greater issues involved if companies had to borrow money just to meet payroll. But to get equipment and all that, I fully understand that because that's quite common. Well, on the larger issue of this campaign, in recent weeks, of course, we've had this plethora of intensely negative campaigning from the McCain-Palin campaign, primarily. And there has been a concern among some people, myself included, about whether it's even going to be possible to put the genie back in the bottle. Now, I think you have a slightly different view on that than I do, because I'm afraid that it can't be.
Well, cyclical, this is historical. This has happened before when we have had huge economic downturns. This is nothing new historically. You know, we had Huey Long of Louisiana in the time frame of the Depression, which many people, you know, if he had not been shot, people think that he might have been able to have defeated Franklin Roosevelt, and he was bad things would have happened. So when people get concerned about their jobs, when, you know, when you lose a trillion or two or $2.5 trillion worth on paper, people get a little concerned. That is not to dismiss this in any way, shape, or form, but it points to some of the reaction. I think it also points to the fact that there's a little more, probably more than a little bit of racism involved. And, you know, this guy like, oh, how is it possible that Obama is ahead and he's going to turn the country into a socialist country? And it's thinking like George Bush is doing that already. But, you know, it's like, well, it's called democracy, guy. That's the way it works. You know, gee, it's too bad your guy's behind, but that's the way it works. And am I concerned about Obama's safety? Yes, I certainly am, because I think this, you know, this great umbrage that John McCain took with, you know, when we were talking about this and all the terrible things that Obama has said, it's just like, well, you know,
it sort of pales in comparison.
You haven't tapped down. You pulled the microphone away from that one woman who, you know, said, oh, I can't vote for him because he's a Muslim. You know, it's like, how stupid can you be?
She said he was an Arab.
An Arab. I'm sorry, an Arab.
It's even dumber.
Yeah. And
by the way, that made the news around the world.
Are Americans stupid? Why? Uh-huh. Yes, they are.
Well, that's what the impression the rest of the world is getting.
Right. The thing is that when he has heard it, most of the time, he maybe doesn't necessarily directly denounce it, but he goes, you know, Obama is, you know, he's a good person, you know, blah, 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 blah. To my knowledge, Palin has never done this. And now it's very, very possible that in the course of at a rally, you don't hear all of this stuff. Because after all, you're up on the stage and there are a lot of people yelling. Yeah. However, once this stuff starts to get reported, it seems to me at some point in your speech, you do the general disclaimer, you know, we may disagree with each other, and this is like you said, and it's a hard-fought campaign, and we raise questions about Barack Obama, but, you know, and you could even say, you know, and we can say, you know, sort of some things about him, but we draw the line at we're not advocating that we don't tolerate someone saying, you know, kill him or anything like that. And there's, you know, I did it very ineloquently, but, you know, probably the way she would. But there is a way to do that, and they didn't, at least with Palin. And, you know, it's just like you can say, oh, now, you know, hey, yeah, but, you know, okay, we're just going to concentrate, you know, and not bring these things up, and they don't do that. And the Obama campaign, it's also the presentation.
Yeah.
The presentation by both Palin and McCain is so frenzied. I mean, Obama brings it up and Biden brings it up, and Biden is probably the most sort of, you know, frenzied, or not even, you know, pumped up when, you know, and Obama, you know, they showed this clip from something about, you know, the speech, and they booed McCain. He says, no, we don't need that. What we all need to do is get out and vote on election day. And he turned around and he went on. And I, you know, the report in the news, that there wasn't another outburst. So there is a way to do it. And John McCain has done it to a certain extent, but Palin stopped haven't done it.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, something to be concerned about.
And I think it is a bit dishonest for McCain tonight to say that he's always repudiated people who've said things that are be online. I mean, apart from the fact he hasn't repudiated Palin for saying some of the stuff she said, there are plenty of examples of his supporters who have said absolutely outrageous things, and he hasn't repudiated them, or only did so under duress, like with that Reverend Hagee or whatever the hell his name is.
Well, there was somebody else who gave some reverend up on the stage who gave some sort of a, which was a sort of mocking everybody who didn't have, who wasn't a Christian, and sort of the response was, well, you know, you can't control what everybody says. Well, when the person's on the platform, yeah, you sure as hell can control everything that a person says. You know, you can say, this is, you know, it's called talking points. Yeah. And that was somewhat disingenuous, but also maybe it was just like, I can see it from another perspective as like, oh God, this idiot got up there. What the hell are we going to say?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and what is true is that you can have the talking points. You can say this is what you need to do, but if the person doesn't do it, I mean, let's divorce ourselves from who this is, and let's just say we're in the situation. What do? Physically remove them?
Yeah.
You know, what do? That's kind of the problem, you know?
Yeah.
Afterwards, you can sort of say, okay, this was uncalled for, but, you know, I don't care who it is, you know, somebody's up on this. What do? You're just kind of going, Jesus Christ, what is this idiot saying?
Well, in fairness to McCain, I suppose, is a sort of backhanded compliment. Well, it isn't really a compliment at all. He's not very good at speaking extemporaneously. So if somebody says something in front of him, I have to put it this way, he's not skilled enough to be able to change his rhetoric around to basically deflate whatever the person said. Barack Obama can do that. He's just very seldom had to.
Right. I think that's very true.
I suppose it's not, in fairness to McCain, it's more in defense of McCain.
Well,
he's still pointing out his flaws.
We discussed this at one point in time. You know, the candidate cannot control everyone.
Yeah.
And you can sort of react to it afterwards. That's sort of the unfortunate thing. But, I mean, there must be tens of thousands of people out there campaigning for both of these people, and you can't.
No. No.
You know, it's just unrealistic. When something, you know, goes astray, you have to go,
And it's not, for me, it's actually not any one particular person or even the kill him incident or terrorist or any of those things. What it is for me is the general tone of the McCain campaign.
Yes.
And, I mean, it's been widely reported. McCain tried to deny it tonight, but I think he was trying to deny it on a technicality. Recently, his ads were surveyed at the University of Wisconsin. They found that he'd been negative 100% of the time, and Obama had been negative 34% of the time. And I would bet you, if you looked at those, that all those negative ads were in response to attacks from McCain Palin. Although I don't know that for certain. I admit that. I suspect that's the case.
I wouldn't know that because I don't see any McCain ads anymore.
Well, no, I don't see any unless I look at them online, and I try not to because they're just so repulsive.
Well, no, because they've pulled all their stuff from Washington and Northern Virginia. They've ceded this part of the state.
Well, and I've been hearing anecdotally that it's looking like there will be a huge switch to Obama and the Democrats in Northern Virginia this year. And if that's true, that'll be a very interesting turn of events.
You'll have the reverse coattails, because John Warner, who is a Republican and who is retiring, and the race for that seat is between Jim Gilmore and Mark Warner. And a couple weeks ago, about a week, 10 days ago, was a poll in which Mark Warner, who is the Democrat, is ahead by, guess, 30. That's correct. 30 points. I think he's going to win.
Well, that actually brings up some... I'm sorry.
Reverse coattails.
Yeah. Well, that actually brings up something interesting. There is talk that the Democrats could theoretically end up with a veto-proof Senate, at least.
Yes.
And they are likely to pick up to have 58 seats, as it stands right now, possibly over 60. And it is theoretically possible that they might get, what do they call it, a supermajority or whatever it's called?
Supermajority, yes.
Although that's far less certain because it's, you know, it's much harder to gauge that those races are.
Well, also, there are only a very limited number of districts that are really and truly competitive, although God knows what will happen. You know, if we, let's put it this way. I think if the stock market goes down 300 or 400 points on Monday, the day before the election, and is going that way on Tuesday, the day of election, John McCain is cooked. Because as somebody pointed out in reading, is the numbers for the congressional races, House and Senate, have the Republicans have tanked almost proportionately to the way the stock market has tanked.
Yeah.
You know, the party in power is going to be punished. And so it's going to be hard for McCain to change the psychology of that.
Yeah, and it could very well be that there may be some of this reverse coattails thing going on if people decide to punish the Republicans. You know, they kick out the Republican incumbent in their congressional district and vote for Obama to sort of punish the Republicans. Mm-hmm. And can I just say, sooner or later, I'm going to write a blog post about this. I frankly think that a loss for the Republicans, preferably in a landslide, would be the best possible thing that could happen to the Republican Party. And I don't mean that as a Democrat. I mean that as an ordinary American citizen. And the reason is that it will give ordinary Republicans the chance to take their party back from the fanatics who've been controlling it for the past 8 years, 8+ years. If the radicals are fully discredited, if their campaigns of divide and division and hate and all those kinds of things are proven to be such a disaster, it will give the ordinary Republicans a chance to come into the void and take their party back. And at the very
you know what I you know what I have to say? I don't know if there are any of those people left.
I know that there are.
I think they become
voters.
Independent. I think they become independents or Democrats. I think the big problem that I see with this notion is that far from allowing whatever moderates are left in the Republican Party to take it back, this will say, we need somebody like Sarah Palin, or we need somebody like Mike Huckabee to be in
the... Well, that could be. And then that would relegate the Republican Party to permanent minority status, because those people don't speak for America. Because one of the talking points of the Republicans is that Barack Obama should be doing better than he's doing, because it's a year that favors the Democrats. And they keep saying that because they want to create doubt around Obama. But the fact of the matter is that if you look at the overall voting behaviors around the country, if you look at the poll results, the actual real election results, the U.S. is pretty evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats. And it's not a surprise that the race is as close as it is. Mind you, I think that people should be rejecting McCain dramatically. But that's an ideological thing. That's not a realistic thing. The reality is that the fact that the election isn't closer is probably more of an issue than the fact that it's as it is.
Well, I mean, when you go back, 2004, it was 286 to 252 in the Electoral College.
Yeah.
The election cycle before that was
even if you look at the popular result for
271 to 267, which was very close, and then of course you go back, that then Clinton was running for re-election, so you've had two cycles of very close elections.
You have
a very close division in the House and the Senate.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've had that
reflects the country.
Right, and since like 2000, the Democrats now are in control, but it's become more and more, it's become closer and closer.
Yeah,
you know, so I don't think that's I totally agree with you. I think that's sort of a reflection of where we are, and also, I think this is the old school of politicking, the notion of the monolith of, here I'm the Democrat, I'm only going to vote for Democrats. Of course, in my case, that would be true. Or I'm a Republican, I'm only going to vote for Republicans. But the perfect example is Virginia. The Democrats have come along. They've had some fairly good candidates. Republicans have had hoof and mouth disease. But certainly, Mark Warner being ahead by 30 points, there's got to be a lot of Republicans who are voting for him. Are going to vote for him because they think Jim Gilmore is a stupid idiot, because he is. So, it's I think overplayed is the notion of this bitter division. I think in some places that's very true.
Oh, sure.
I think that's who you hear from.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes good copy.
Yeah.
I think that's easy copy.
Yeah.
Or an easy story. You know, you have the blogosphere of the right, you have the blogosphere of on the left, and,
yeah.
and you know, and all these people screaming at each other. And I think there is a large segment, probably the majority of the people, who are from slightly right of center to slightly left of center. And I would bet you probably 50 to 60% of the country is there, and you've got 20% on the fringes. And
that's
they scream
right.
the loudest.
Yeah. And they get all the attention as a result.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. And I have to admit that on my own blog, I've gone out of my way to be stroppier, I suppose. But I like to think not quite as crazy as the people on the right. But the main thing is that I feel I've been provoked by the McCain-Palin campaign, because they have been so out there and they've been so filled with lies and distortions and smears that I'm just outraged. It isn't, I mean, the Obama campaign can take care of themselves. They can wage their own battles. They can defend themselves. They don't need my help. But as just one ordinary American citizen, I am so outraged by the behavior that I feel I have to respond. And sometimes I know that I've responded in stronger and more colorful language than I otherwise might have. Well, it's probably about time that we wrapped up this episode. But before we go, what was the final CNN poll result for the debate?
CNN instant poll, which will be reported tomorrow across the world.
Including in this podcast.
Spanning the globe. Anyway, I'll read you the lead. Hampstead, New York, CNN. A majority of debate watchers thought that Senator Barack Obama won the third and final presidential debate, according to a national poll conducted at the end of the debate. 58% of debate watchers questioned in the CNN Opinion Research Corp poll said the Democrat Obama did the best job in the debate, with 31% saying Republican Senator John McCain performed best. The poll also suggested that debate watchers' favorable opinion of Obama rose during the debate from 63% at the start of the debate to 66% at the end of the debate. The poll indicates that McCain's favorables dropped from 51% to 49%. Poll was conducted by telephone with 620 adult Americans who watched the debate. Sample's error is plus or minus 4%.
Which is reasonably high, but that's all right, because it is a snap poll.
Right.
Very interesting, and I would tend to agree.
Yes, I would too.
Well, we will have to speed up our recording schedule in order to be able to get all the commentary in between now and the election. So, but I think both of our schedules are a bit freer than they have been, so maybe we'll actually be able to pull it off now.
Yes.
Yes, because that has been the problem. I mean, I had all sorts of things that I had to do to get ready for our nieces, and then they were here, and then I had my busiest week of the month, and Jason went visiting his folks, his family, and then his family came to visit him, and so, oh my goodness, it was just madness.
Yes, total and complete.
Okay, well, that will wrap it up for today then, and we will be back when we are. Well, we don't know.
Brilliant and
we don't know
brilliant
what it is yet.
And cogent and, you know, wow. Anyway, I'm going to get in my little plug for my blog.
Yes, do that.
jasonsviewfromdc.blogspot.com. All sorts of fun and interesting things going on in Washington, D.C. I got to hear Bob Costas speak at the National Press Club on Monday. It was quite enjoyable and interesting, and you can read all about it in the blog.
Very good. Well, that will wrap it up for this episode.
Okay, and this is Jason from Washington, D.C.
And Arthur from Auckland, New Zealand. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Aaron's Podcast at aaronspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at aaronspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.